Good day, everyone, everywhere, and special greetings to all those seated in heavenly places in Yahshua, our Messiah, called Jesus in the West. Thanks to our good friends who updated the King James Version, and with the authorized King James Version, we got a whole slew of new names, starting with J. I don't know what to say about Americanized. I don't know what the influence was there to change all the names, but that's what we have with the authorized King James Version. And we are going through the scriptures here using our e-sword. And I'd advise everyone to get this program if you don't have it. You can go to firstamendmentradio.com and find a link there for eSword, or you can go directly to e-sword.net and download the program there. And I believe that this is, it's the best software I found. And I used to purchase software before I found this. And it's better than anything I ever purchased. So I'd advise everyone who is interested in studying the scripture to get this tool. Because with this tool, you get the original language. You get to compare it at your fingertips anytime you want. You can just mouse over a word, the number, the Strong's Hebrew and Greek number for the word, and you can peer into the original language, the Textus Receptus, the majority text from which the scripture was translated. And with that, you get Strong's pronunciations and definitions. And then you can search those out to see how the translators translated that word throughout the whole scripture to get a better balance of what's actually going on in the translation. No, you don't need to be a Greek and Hebrew scholar to study the scripture. All you need to do is know how to use the tool, and you can have as much or more information than a scholar, because I noticed that a lot of people can be puffed up in their education. And we don't want to be puffed up in any instance. We're going through the scripture here, book by book, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. And last time we left off in 2 Corinthians. We're about chapter 8 is where we left off last time. I don't exactly remember where it was, a few days ago. So we'll just pick up in chapter 8, verse 1. That way we'll make sure we get the full context and we don't miss anything. Chapter 8. And verse 1 of 2 Corinthians, "Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia." We do you to wit. Well, I haven't heard anyone say anything like that lately or use that kind of language construction. We do you to wit. The apostle takes occasion from the good example of the churches in Macedonia. And I believe what he's saying is, we want you to pay attention to what the churches in Macedonia are doing. At least that's what I'm getting here. To exhort the Corinthians and the Christians of Achaia to the good work of charity. And he acquaints them with their great liberality. That's the church at Macedonia. So that's what's going on here. He continues, "How that in great trial and affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For to their power I bear record, yea, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take it upon us, the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And this they did, not as we hope, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God, insomuch that we desired Titus, that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you the same grace also. Therefore, as you abound in every thing, in faith and utterance and knowledge and all diligence and in your love to us, see that you abound in this grace also. I speak not to you by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness of others, and to prove the sincerity of your love." And basically, Paul here is provoking those in Corinth to be as charitable as the Macedonians, if you didn't get that, and the archaic construction of the words there, almost like speaking in a code. Sometimes when I read some of the writings of Paul, it seems that way, but then I have to remind myself, well, you know what? Paul didn't write in English, and Paul did not pen the authorized or the King James Version of 1611. So I perhaps have to believe that that something got lost in the translation, or somehow it became archaic or code-like in the translation. I wonder about these things sometimes, but that's what studying the scriptures or biblical studies is all about, is to study into the Bible and to take note of these things and to understand there's more to it than just what you're reading in the authorized King James Version, or to differentiate the 1611 version. Unlike a lot of people who say the AV 1611, they're combining the two, and then they read out of the authorized version as if there's no difference. And there's a there's quite a wide difference between the two texts. And that being translated from what we call the majority text, or the Textus Receptus, the original language, the majority text by the translators, I believe they did a fairly good job. So that's, you know, and it's the best we have as far as in the English goes. All of the others, the translations, or the majority of the newer translations, I should say, use a corrupted text as far as I'm concerned, and as far as many are concerned. That's why we stick to the authorized King James Version. And beside that, like I said, we have attached to it in this eSword program here, this wonderful tool where we can peer into and straighten out some of the things. But some of the things I cannot be straightened out unless we can get to the original language. Like I was saying, the archaic construction of the language here in this chapter, I don't know who to attribute it to, the translators or to the Greek or to the one or to Paul himself. But the words and the intent is good. And we have this wonderful tool here. Like I said, you add on Henry's commentary, and he can straighten some of these things out if you can't get through the understanding of what seems like almost like code. You really, you know, for someone that doesn't know the gospel, if someone unlearned or an unbeliever were to pick up the Bible and they were to read the first part of chapter 8, they would be totally lost, not understanding the language of Christians and the language of the Bible. I guess that's what I was trying to say, so that it's almost like a code, unless you already know how to decipher it and what all the nuances of and all the inferences mean in the text. Because I even struggle with it somewhat. So I could imagine someone coming in here and having no understanding of the scripture, these things, and being totally confused. But I say persist, as I can remember going back here a very, very long time. Oh, what has it been now, 35 years or more that I've been studying in the scripture and reading, like reading the book of Proverbs in the beginning. It was like reading another language. That's how it seemed to me. And it was really reading a different way of thinking. And I guess that's another way I could put it. Sometimes, you know, reading the scripture seems foreign. And especially to the unlearned, especially to the unbelievers, and especially to those who have no experience in these things. They're told to pick up the scripture, and most of them can't endure it, because it's like reading another language, but really it's another way of thinking that you're reading about. Let's continue here with the words of Paul and his exhortation to the Corinthians to be as charitable as those in Macedonia. He says, as it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. Okay, see, now, without an explanation, what is he talking about? See, now, but if you know the scripture, we know exactly what he's talking about, as it is written, of course, he says. So now you got to search out where it is written, and may have skipped a verse there. For if there be a first willing mind, accepting according to that man hath, and not according to that he hath not. At chapter 8, verse 12, verse 13, for I mean not that other men be eased and ye be burdened, but by an equality that now at this time your abundance may be a supply for their want. And that means that you could give out of your abundance, basically, that their abundance may also be a supply for your want, that there may be an equality. As it is written, he that had gathered much had nothing over, and he that had gathered little had no lack. And of course, that's referring back to the time of the children of Israel wandering in the wilderness and gathering up, the manna and the quail. But thanks be to God, which put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed, he accepted the exhortations, but being more forward of his own accord, he went unto you. And we have sent him with the brother whose praise is in the gospel throughout all the churches. And not that only, but who was also chosen of the churches to travel with us with this grace which is administered by us to the glory of the same Lord and declaration of your ready mind. Avoiding this, that no man should blame us in this abundance which is administered by us, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And we have sent with them our brother, whom we have oft times proved diligent in many things, but now much more diligent, upon the great confidence which I have in you. Whether any do inquire of Titus, he is my partner and fellow helper concerning you, or our brethren, be inquired of, they are the messengers of the churches and the glory of Christ. Wherefore show ye to them and before the churches the proof of your love and of our boasting on your behalf. And all that to say to the Corinthians that to encourage them to give out of their abundance and to be as charitable as what was demonstrated by the charity of the Macedonians to the churches that had lack, and especially we're referring here much to Palestine and Judea and Jerusalem, where they were having great trouble in the land. This was the time between when the Messiah had departed, in the middle of the 70th week. And of course, he was there for another 40 days and he showed himself to many people. Many people came out of the grave and witnessed. And for 3.5 years, the last half of the 70th week, the gospel was ministered there in Judea and Jerusalem to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And many, thousands upon thousands, were converted to the faith, or believed on the Messiah because they were already of the faith. So they accepted these things, albeit maybe not too readily, because you have to go against the flow, but the truth would win out in a heart that is true. So the gospel went to all those that were ready and willing and able to accept it there. And of the lost, or of the sheep of Israel, the house of Israel. And then after the 70th week was up, or the last 3.5 years after the Messiah was cut off, the gospel was carried to the Gentiles or the other nations round about. And the oracles of God were also committed to them, even though at the hand of, it wasn't really committed to the Gentiles, but it was committed to, we do have one, and that would be Luke, who was a Greek, who gave us the gospel according to Luke, and also the Acts of the Apostles. But what I mean to say is the gospels and New Testament were transmitted into the Greek language. Whether they were originally in that language, well, it would seem that some of them, they probably were, because I'm trying to think of an instance where any of the Gospels or any of the writings were written before the 3.5 years was up. So the church fathers, the apostles, and including Paul and the other brethren and the elders of the church, the early church in those early days, where most of those were recorded, probably all from what I can gather, were recorded after the 70 weeks of Daniel were up and the time that was appointed for Israel or determined for Israel was up. So we have them transmitted in the language or in the international language because the gospel went to the nations and because the time for national Israel was up. So unbelieving Israel attained the same status as all of the other unbelieving nations out there. And the gospel, of course, would be ministered to them on the same footing after the 3.5 years were up or Daniel's 70 weeks were up. The gospel would be ministered to them on the same footing as it would be ministered to all of the other nations or the Gentiles. I hope I'm not losing anybody in this explanation here. Just trying to affirm the historical position that we're in now or in context here in 2 Corinthians as Paul's writing. So we're after that time where the gospel is going to the nations, of course, Paul ministering, but the church, the believers in Messiah in Jerusalem and in Judea are suffering under a great oppression. They're suffering persecution from their own countrymen. And that would be, most people would call them the Jews, the children of Israel as it existed in those days, national Israel. They were suffering under persecution from them, those that did not accept the Messiah, that is. Plus, they were suffering under the general affliction of Judah and Jerusalem for the national sin of Israel, the judgment of God, which was determined, and the desolations which were coming, which they were instructed to flee before they came. That was their instruction from the Messiah. So you have a time of great affliction in Judah and Jerusalem, and that's the reason that Paul is calling on the Corinthians to be like-minded as the Macedonians and to minister with their substance to those that are suffering under the affliction of that time that the church in Judea and Jerusalem are going through. And of course, we know that the time during which Paul is speaking or writing this in time context, that the time is coming for them to flee. Many of them perhaps have already fled or are making preparations to flee. And we have it recorded that they had all things in common. And that's something that you would do if you were preparing to flee, especially groups of people are preparing to flee. They would have many things in common. They would sell all that they had so that they could travel together, so that the poor among them would have no lack, because it was more important to follow the instructions of the Messiah, who said, when you see these things coming, flee to the mountains, flee Jerusalem. And of course, then they fled to the other nations and carried the gospel to the Gentiles as part of the gospel going to all the nations, that all the nations of the earth might be blessed by the seed of Abraham in all nations. Yes. Okay, so that's the time context anyway. Let's move on to 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 1. For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. Superfluous, and there's another word you don't hear too much. It is superabundant in quantity, superior by implication, excessive that I should write to you. It is excessive for me to write to you. I'll just let it go by and see how it feels as we continue to read. I'm not sure. Perhaps he's saying, I think I understand. As far as touching the ministering of the saints, perhaps he's saying it is unnecessary for me to write to you. For I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very much. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain, in the behalf that, as I said, you may be ready, lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we say not, ye should be ashamed in the same confident boasting. Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up the beforehand your bounty, where you had noticed before that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as of covetousness. Paul saying, I'm sending people before me to make sure that you guys take advantage of the opportunity to give and to show your charity so that it's ready to receive when we come. Okay, you're listening to Across the Border. We'll continue when we get back from these messages. Don't go anywhere.